Inflation, recession, stagflation. Just what the hell is going on? Hi there. Thanks for tuning in to another Real Vision podcast. So what the hell is going on? We all want to know. Here at Real Vision, we've debuted a special series called Global Recession, Is Everyone Wrong? We've called on the world's best experts, including Juliette de Klerk, David Rosenberg, Peter Zeihan, Pierre Andoran, and many more to try and help us make sense of things. These real experts will be giving Real Vision members in-depth, long-form analysis on the real stuff that's happening. Best of all, you can get access to all 14 days of Global Recession, Is Everyone Wrong? For just $1. Yep, $1. So head to realvision.com/globalrecession. That's realvision.com/globalrecession to join us on this epic 2-week journey of discovery.
Welcome to Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Monday, May 23rd, 2022. I'm Ash Bennington, joined today by one of our favorite guests, Jared Dillian, author of The Daily Dirt Nap. First, let's take a look at what's happening in U.S. equity markets. It's a risk-on day. That's the short answer. Dow Jones Industrial Average looks like the big winner of the major U.S. equity indices, up nearly 2% on the day, closing out at 31,858. S&P up about 1.85%, just a shade below 4,000, closing out the day at 3,973. NASDAQ also up 1.5 points, closing after the day, 1.59, but we'll call it 1.6, 11,535. I think the S&P 500, Jared, has officially clawed its way out of bear market territory.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think it's kind of likely that, you know, that little dip into bear market territory on Friday, I think really that's all the satisfaction the bears are going to get. You know, I think we sort of rang the bell on that, and we're going higher from here.
Yeah. So, Jared, that's some bullish sounding sentiment. Tell me, what's the framework? How are you thinking about this?
Well, you know, I mean, you know me, I'm the sentiment guy. I mean, look at the Barron's cover over the weekend. You know, like a bear mauling. Like, I mean, literally a bear mauling on the cover of Barron's. Like, you know, we've seen some interesting stuff. You know, I think the dollar has peaked. Sentiment on the dollar got incredibly one way. Yeah. You were looking at like DSIs in the low single digits.
For folks who may not know, tell us what DSIs are.
It's a sentiment indicator, like really, and it sort of puts a number on it. You know, I sort of deal with the more anecdotal stuff, but you can look at DSIs across a range of assets.
Daily sentiment index.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I've spent a lot of time on Twitter and I see all of these sentiment indicators one after we literally have an avalanche of sentiment indicators. Actually, I'll tell you what it reminds me of. It reminds me of March of 2008. Okay. March of 2008 is when Bear Stearns was liquidated, right? March 17th, 2008. And you know, subprime was blowing up. The market was crashing. It was down about, you know, 25% from the highs. And everybody was max bearish at the point that Bear Stearns blew up. And then the market rallied 17% from March to June. 17% rally. So all the people that were in the big short trade got squeezed out of it. And they were flat in June. And then they missed the whole thing. And that's what's happening here. Look, I totally think it's possible that the S&P 500 can make lower lows 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now. I think that's possible. But the sentiment is so one-sided right now that we're set up for this epic squeeze, and I think it's going to happen.
Yeah. So unpack that. Talk a little bit about the broader context of what that means and how you think this market is positioned.
Well, you know, you can see how the market's positioned. Like you can see it in the price action. On Friday, you know, we dipped down into that bear market territory. And in the last half hour of the day, you had a 1.2% rally because everybody wanted to go home flat. They wanted to cover their shorts, cover their exposure going into the weekend. So you can actually see from the price actioning where the positioning is. And there's lots more shorts behind that. And I can tell you, it's been a terrible year for hedge funds. right? They were caught max long on the highs in January, and they wrote it down. And now, in order to make it up, you know, basically in trading, you have to do what works. The market's going down, so they have to short it on the way down. And now positioning is extreme on the downside.
Yeah. Hey, Jared, we got a whole raft of international news stories coming out today. Let me just read through a couple of these bullet points, and you can just give us your take. Let's start with Asia first. So there are three major stories coming out of Asia. One, the United States announcing the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, IPEF. This is about digital supply chains and a whole series of other free trade type of initiatives. We've got President Biden saying that he's going to review some of the China tariffs that were put in by the previous administration, by the Trump administration. And then we have a story coming out of China that they're announcing a tax relief plan of over $21 billion to boost their economy. This is effectively a kind of fiscal stimulus happening over in China. Jared, any thoughts on all of this?
Well, you know, with regard to the IPEF, I mean, I haven't looked at it until you mentioned it, but I can tell you that, you know, the politics of it are that really neither party in the U.S., the Democrats, the Republicans, are in favor of free trade. This is really the first free trade thing we've heard in a long time. And deglobalization has contributed to inflation and higher prices in the U.S., and it will continue along that path. But if you're talking about removing tariffs in the digital realm, where we're talking about technology, you know, that's very good thing. So, you know, this is the first I've heard of it, but it actually sounds pretty positive.
Well, here's something that's interesting. Obviously, this is just breaking. I'm looking at a Wire story here that came out within the last, call it 30 minutes or so. And one of the bullet points in the text I'm looking at on the CNBC website is, importantly, IPEF is not a free trade agreement. It's a plan designed to help expand the U.S.'s economic leadership in the Indo-Pacific region. That coming out of CNBC. Obviously, this is a relatively new story breaking now. So I guess the question is, what exactly is the significance of a free trade deal that's not a free trade deal?
It's a free trade deal. They just don't want to call it a free trade deal. That's what's going on. So, because nobody likes free trade right now. So,
yeah, and you make the point, I think, spot on, Jared, which is it's not popular right now in either party.
Yeah.
One other big international news story coming out of Europe today, which is Christine Lagarde signaling the end to negative interest rates at the ECB. This is also obviously a big deal. The ECB joining the Fed in beginning the process, the long process, we should say, of normalizing monetary policy, Jared.
Well, you know, the ECB is the slowest central bank in the world. You know, they're literally like 2 or 3 years behind. So the fact that they're they're behind even the U.S., which was slow, in the U.S. today we had, you know, Atlanta Vice President Fed President Bostic.
Boy, talk about brand new. This is like within the last hour.
Happened within the last hour. He made a comment that we could pause the rate hikes in September. And one of the things I've been talking about in my newsletter, I said, look, the Fed sees the data. And the Fed ultimately cares more about preventing a recession than they do about inflation. The politics about inflation are very bad. It's hurting Biden's approval numbers. But ultimately, what's worse than that is people losing their jobs. They still care more about recessions. So, you know, the comment I made in my newsletter is, wait, you're going to see these Fed speakers, they're going to start making comments about pausing or slowing down rate hikes or waiting to see what happens. And Bostic is the first one, and you're going to see more after that.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is the rates market didn't move on it at all. I mean, if you looked at Fed funds futures, they didn't move on this news at all, which I thought was shocking.
Yeah, we've been talking about this here on Real Vision Daily Briefing. I know you and I have had this conversation, which is it's really this Scylla and Charybdis, this trying to thread the needle between these opposing pain points that we're talking about here. Inflation, obviously CPI over 8% right now. On the producer price index side, PPI, double-digit prints. On the other, the risk of hearing about, you know, GDP in contraction and the impact on jobs here in the United States. Obviously, this is the challenge with the dual mandate. As you say, we've kind of been skewed to one side, to the inflation side, and now it's possible that we're about to see maybe a swing back to fear of what's going to happen in labor markets. Jay Powell, historically, over the last several months at least, has been signaling that labor markets are extremely tight. But this is really interesting, this comment from Governor Bostic around the potential to maybe slow down this normalization process.
Yeah, I mean, labor markets were tight, but I think they're loosening up. And I think you're starting to see the supply chain open up. You're starting to see orders for goods get canceled. You know, it is resolving itself. And I think you will see, I mean, independent of what the Fed does, I think inflation's going to drop probably down to about 5% or so.
Inflation will be down to 5%.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
What, now, when you think that through, Jared, what is it that are the leading indicators that you're seeing out there that suggest to you that we might see inflation dropping rapidly down to 5%? I mean, this is basically very much in keeping with the thesis that the Fed had put out, this notion of transitory inflation that I think has been retired by Fed Chair Jay Powell. But give us a sense of what your leading indicators are that you're looking at.
I mean, all right. So, you know, I'm partly talking out of my ass, but, you know, aside from that, like, I mean, look, I've seen a bunch of charts come my way today, you know, that sort of indicate that the economy is slowing down. Absolutely is slowing down. So, you've seen a bunch of layoffs in tech. Okay. It hasn't really spread to other parts of the economy, but you are seeing layoffs in tech. I think that's the beginning of it. So right. It is happening.
Yeah, someone sent me a very sort of sobering article from Y Combinator, I'm losing the word because I'm on camera here, of course, live. But the incubator out in Silicon Valley where they do a lot of the private market funding, basically it's a bellwether of what's happening in private markets in the venture capital space. And the interesting thing is these were some really, really grim tidings, effectively saying that the challenges that had been occurring over in public markets on the tech side had been beginning to filter in to private markets out in the valley. Some very sobering points.
Yeah, and one of the things I forgot to mention is that ISM is dropping. Okay, so it's at about 55 right now, but it's down from about...
These are the Institute for Supply Management numbers. Yeah. Citing.
So ISM is dropping. It'll continue to drop. And I think within the next couple of months, you could see a below 50 print on ISM.
Give us a sense, that's obviously the contractionary level. Give us a sense of the significance of those ISM numbers.
Well, I mean, that's really an indicator of manufacturing intentions. You know what I mean? So it's one of the most, if you look at economic indicators, you have lagging indicators, which are unemployment. And the interesting thing is we make a lot of decisions based on unemployment, but that's a severely lagging indicator. But ISM, when you talk about manufacturing and purchasing intentions, that's really at the leading edge of the economy. So, you know, in the old days, you know, back in like 2002 or 2003, if the ISM went above 50, the Fed would immediately start hiking rates. They were that responsive.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So let's talk a little bit about something that you mentioned, because I know you mentioned at the top of the show, the newsletter. This, of course, is Daily Dirt Nap, where you talk about TLT, First, give a little bit of background on what TLT is for people who don't follow the fixed income markets as closely as you do, Jared. And second, explain a bit of the significance of what we're seeing there right now.
Okay, so TLT is an ETF. It's a fixed income ETF. It holds bonds between 20 and 30 year maturities. So it has the on the run 30 year bond and basically all the off the run bonds going back to 20 years. So a lot of people think about TLT, they say, okay, this is the long bond. It's actually not the long bond. It has a slightly shorter duration. It's a portfolio, but it's close enough. So I think that rates have peaked. And I'm pretty sure I said that on the daily briefing a couple of weeks ago, maybe with Maggie. But I think that rates have peaked. I have taken a long position in bonds. Because of all the things that I mentioned, because I think we're entering a slowdown, because I think inflation is going down, and because I think rate hike expectations are going to get taken out of the market.
Yeah. I'm not sure if we have a chart of TLT, but if we do, it'd be great to put it up. And let me just say this, for those who are looking at the chart right now, TLT moves in relation to the price of bonds, so inversely to yield. That's what you're seeing when you're looking at the TLT chart. So, Jared, what else has your attention right now? I know we've covered a lot of points in terms of the news cycle. You've got a lot of things that you're working on right now in the Daily Dirt app. What are some of your thoughts, and how do you see them influencing markets?
Well, I mean, basically, most of what I'm writing about is focused on this the sentiment significance of what's happening with the bear market and stocks. This is when we got the CPI number. I made sort of a splashy call that, you know, it didn't really matter how bad the CPI number was, that stocks would rally. That was at about 39.60 in the S&P, and we're still at about 39.60 in the S&P. I think we are having a bottoming process. But I really think that a rally could take us all the way back to the Fibonacci retracement. I think we could go significantly higher. I think it would surprise a lot of people. And the catalyst for that, I think, is, you know, getting comments like what Bostic said out of the Fed. I think if we get some of those comments, I think that could actually be the catalyst for the rally.
Yeah. I just want to hit on one other thing. I know you're long gold and silver. Tell us a little bit about your position on precious metals.
Sure. I mean, you know, I've had it for 17 years, but it's, you know, look, like, gold has been super disappointing. It was kind of fun after the Ukraine invasion. And we made a double top at 2060, going back a couple of years. And since then, it's just completely, and silver has been worse. I mean, silver, I don't really have a big position in silver. It's very small, but that's just been a horror show. We have seen a little bit of a bounce in the last week or so, getting up to about 1850, 1860 in gold. So I don't know. We'll see.
Trading right now, we should say, 1853 per ounce for gold and 2178 right now as we're live on air for silver.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm kind of a gold permabull. I'm not very objective on it. I like to think I'm objective about a lot of things, but I'm not really objective about gold. I always think it's going higher. You know, the interesting thing is that gold is up this year, and a lot of people shit on gold. Oh, look how bad it's done. We have inflation, we have this war, and yet gold is outperforming stocks by a lot. Stocks are down 18% and gold is up like 2%. I don't know. I don't think that's so bad. So,
yeah, let me hit one other quote that I thought was really interesting from Daily Dirt Nap. This is a quote about Kathy Wood. She's down 70%. She thinks she's still on the comeback trail. It's not an act. It's not a grift. She knows what she is doing is right. You have to admire that kind of conviction. Jared, Kathy Wood getting a lot of heat from a lot of quarters, but sounds like you're quite bullish on the strategy.
Oh, no, I'm not bullish on the strategy at all. I'm not bullish on the strategy at all. Look, everybody's wrong at various times. We all get to be wrong. And she's been massively wrong for like 70%, okay? But the thing that I admire about her is that she believes in what she is doing, okay? Yes. She absolutely believes it. It's not an act. She's not saying these things to get assets like she is a true believer. So I think that maybe if she continues on this strategy for the next 10 years. There's no style drift. She doesn't buy consumer staple stocks or anything else. She sticks with this strategy over the next 10 years. I think it'll actually work out. But the problem is that in markets, you have corrections, you right. get a margin call, you get stopped out. And that's the part of trading that she doesn't seem to realize.
Yeah. Okay, so let me narrow the question down a little bit. What part of the thesis are you bullish on where you talk about over a 10-year horizon, you think she may be successful? Is there some sort of fundamental aspect of the strategy, of the core idea, apart from the sort of trade cycle and positioning component of it, that you feel has some legs?
Well, you know, growth investing is kind of a mess right now, but, you know, we kind of forget about it. But for long periods of time, growth investing works. You know, it really does. And she's sort of at the pointy end of growth investing. So all the technology she's talking about, whether it's AI or anything, like, you know, 10 years is a long time. This is 2022. Think how different the world is now than when it was in 2012. You know, a lot of these things that she's talking about could come to pass.
Indeed. So let's talk also about where you are on oil. Give us a sense. We're trading, I think, 110 right now on WTI. What are your thoughts about the oil markets?
So after the invasion, oil spiked to 130, and then it kind of completed a wedge pattern, and it broke out from the wedge, and it traded up to like 114 or something like that. So technically, it looks pretty good. I still have problems with the sentiment. It's very consensus, you know. It's very consensus. Sentiment on energy is higher than for any other sector. And it doesn't really matter to me what the chart looks like. I just cannot get past the sentiment. It's just too hot.
Yeah. So talking of oil, also in that thesis, very often the dollar. I wanted to run a clip. We're changing stuff up a little bit here today from the Real Vision crypto tier. And I think you'll see why, because there's some significant intersection with the macro markets on this clip. It's a clip from a show called Crypto Fates is Tied to Old School Finance. This is Francis Hunt, the crypto sniper, in conversation with me. This is the Real Vision crypto tier. And that, of course, is free to all with an email address. Let's take a look at the clip.
The people that manage the dollar don't like threats to the dollar. And one of the best ways to emphasize their authority is to do a bit of chest beating, like the chief silverback in the troop. And so they really crank the dollar strength up. I think what the Fed is actually doing is almost more driven by the potential of punishing those that are looking into other systems and creating demand, because momentum creates demand, much like FOMO in crypto. So you drive dollar strength with a Fed policy that is doing tightening. And I think they're going to turn the screw a little bit further than most people come. We all know the stimulus comes in the end, but I think they're going to really get the pip squeaking before that event. This is a very sustained right. risk off environment, which then means that we're going to get held down a lot longer on crypto and on the tech side. And this also helps them with the inflation narrative to a degree, but it passes the inflation to the rest of the world, because with the dollar going up, people still buying their oil in dollar, Euroland, Japan, now they have the inflation problem. They already do. Europe has even worse problems with the gas prices that they pay over there. But when you go into this particular kind of narrative, it's going to get extreme for them. And part, not all, because in my opinion, if you ask me to characterize the economic environment we're in, it's hyperstagflation. That means really hard pressure on any form of true growth for the retail consumer.
Francis Hunt, the crypto sniper on the Real Vision crypto tier, free to everyone. Here's what stuck out to me about that clip, Jared. Quote, I think what the Fed is actually doing is almost more driven by the potential of punishing those that are looking into other systems and creating demands, because momentum creates demand, much like in crypto. So basically, Francis Hunt saying, in effect, Fed intentionally managing the dollar upward.
I mean, usually here in the United States, we want the dollar to go down. I don't know if the Fed was targeting any currency values, but I can tell you, as a consequence of the Fed's actions, it has made foreign currencies very weak relative to the dollar, and now they have to target their FX values. So,
yeah. All right. So let's jump into questions. They're coming in fast and thick. First one from Ralph Humphrey from the Real Vision site. This is a question perfectly custom tailored for you, obviously somebody who knows your work. And the question is, what are the most important sentiment indicators you look at, Jared?
Indicators. Well, you know, I tend to deal in anecdotes. You know what I mean? I'll tell you a great one. This is an amazing one. So I was talking to sort of like a friend of a friend. It was a woman from the Upper East Side, and she was telling me that her daughter was trading stocks. This was like 3 weeks ago. And I said, what kind of stocks is she buying? She said she bought Coke and Procter & Gamble. And I'm like, wow, this is great. The kids aren't buying growth stocks anymore. They're not buying crypto. They're buying Coke. And of course, that was days before the 6% wipeout in XLP. Literally days before, you know. So if you want to ask me what kind of indicators I look at, really, I just have my eyes open and my ears open, and I talk to people, and everything somebody says is a piece of information. It's a piece of the puzzle. So I'm always listening.
Yeah. By the way, for those who do not know, XLP is a consumer staples select sector spider fund trading under the ticker XLP, of course. So here's one from actually on YouTube, and the question comes from Is This It Q, and the question is Jared ready for gold to disappoint and pull back again?
I'm always ready. You know, I spend a lot of time looking at the chart, and the thing with gold is that when it broke out from that wedge, that three-year wedge, it did what it was supposed to do. It skyrocketed higher, and now it's kind of in technical no man's land. I'm psychologically prepared for it to trade in the 1700s, and it actually did for a little bit. It got down to about 1785. But in the context of like other asset classes, I mean, really, it's only been about like a 15% drawdown or something, maybe less, maybe 12 or 13%. Like, it's super painful, but I mean, stocks are worse. Crypto is a lot worse. Even bonds are, I think bonds are almost as bad. So, you know, it's just like, pick your asset class. Like, it's actually not that bad. I tend to be an optimist about it.
Yeah, Jared, this is one of the things that we like about having you on Real Vision Daily Briefing. You're never surprised by anything. You're a trader. You're prepared for anything to happen.
Yeah, that is true. I am not surprised by anything. Yeah.
We're going to take another quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Here's a question from Sean Daw. This one comes to us from YouTube. Hello, both. Is Jared still positive since last appearance, I think, on Daily Briefing on long bonds? And also, you covered that a bit on TLT. But Sean also wants to know about your view on munis.
Okay, so bonds, I am still bullish. I'm long. I have a pretty big position. I'm losing a little bit of patience with it. It's bonds are forming a base. It's taking a little bit longer than I thought. It's really hard for bonds to rally meaningfully unless rate hike expectations come in. Like, it's otherwise, you know, what happens is we have this dynamic where stocks will be up 1 or 2% and the long bond will be down 0.5%. And you just get caught in this washing machine, and it never gets better. So you really need rate hike expectations to come in. Munis, I mean, if you're in the top tax bracket and you're looking for a way to get fixed income exposure, munis are the best way to do it. And I would actually recommend individual bonds. You know, talk with your broker, pick out some individual bonds, and hold them to maturity. You know, I actually have, I have a muni closed-end fund, and it's leveraged, and it got caught in this leverage drawdown a couple of weeks ago. So that's the way most people invest in munis, but I think individual bonds are better.
Yeah, for folks who do not may not know, I spent some years actually in muni land myself, and obviously federally tax exempt, and depending upon the state, also potentially exempt from state tax as well. Boy, here's a great question that comes to us from Kyle Noblechief. I hope I'm saying that right, from YouTube. And the question is, oil prices rise, food prices rise. How does inflation go down?
No, I mean, look, the rate of change is already slowing. You know right. what I mean? I mean, even absolute CPI is slowing. It went from 8.5 to 8.3. And even before we had a drop in CPI, the rate of change was slowing. So, I mean, that's what you're looking at. You know, you're right. looking at the second derivative. You know, so
right.
it's absolute. So it, yes, food prices and energy prices are rising, but they're not rising as much. I mean, sure, even with inflation at 5%, they're still rising. Food and energy prices are still rising, just not as fast. I'm not saying there's going to be deflation.
Right. Important distinction. Jared, always great having you on the show, particularly great having you on the show today when we've got some market action happening, some volatility, and this regime shift, at least for a day, into the risk-on mode that we've just seen. Final thoughts, key takeaways that you'd like to leave our Real Vision Daily Briefing audience with?
I'll kind of say what I said in my newsletter today. I mean, just try to be optimistic. One of the things I talked about in the piece was, does anybody ever put on a trade expecting it to be a loser? If you're putting on a trade and you expect it to be a loser, you should not put on that trade, right? So look, like I actually, like I said, I admire Kathy Wood. I admire what she's doing. I just wish she was a better risk manager.
Jared, always a pleasure to have you on. Always fun to have you here. Thank you again for joining us.
Thanks.
And thanks for watching Real Vision Daily Briefing. I'll be back tomorrow with Tommy Thornton.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.